Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coolong in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day.
Now the set of the pitch. Swing by Cabrera and a bomb down the left field line, hooking toward the corner. And this time, it is a fair ball and gone goodbye. Asdrubal Cabrera with his first home run of the year as a Washington National.
In fact, even the bat boy got into the action and had a double in last night's game. All right, the Nationals won big last night.
Thanks to the Pirates.
Took care of the Pirates, the gift that just keeps on giving. All right. Let's bring in Neil Coolong now from Pittsburgh, USA Today. Neil has been going through exhaustive. He's gone to every Dunham's, every Dick's Sporting Goods, everywhere he could possibly think of to find Antonio Brown a helmet.
It's great to be here. It's funny you bring that up. We actually were digging around for that a little bit. They're harder to find than you might think. He put his work in. That's for sure. I'll just say that for everything that we did to find it. The message we received pretty loud and clear when looking around the market was, no, we don't make that helmet anymore. And I think that might be the root of the problem that Brown is having with the NFL. I think there's a reason why they don't make it anymore. But, as we just found out, out in Oakland, they started a practice after he was warming up on the field and everything, and everyone else put their helmet on, and he didn't. He went into the weight room. So looks like it's another day of him not practicing with the team due to, I would imagine, the issue that he has with his helmet. And it's beyond description at this point. I really don't understand what he thinks he's going to get out of all this, except for maybe some paid time off, depending on how Oakland wants to handle it.
Except I have a slightly different angle on it. Yeah, okay. There is comfort with a helmet. I understand that. Okay, that I don't understand. But some guys, it's preseason. Some guys don't want to practice preseason. I don't think he wants to practice.
I think you're right. I think for the most part, here's what I would say. If I was Antonio Brown, and I've already orchestrated my way out of a trade to the Bills, yeah, and I've gotten a location that I want, and I've managed to pull off one of the most one-sided trades in NFL history, and on top of it, I had another $30 million guaranteed from his new team. I have all this power. I would imagine somewhere in the conversation I'm going to slip in, you know what, I really don't feel like going to training camp. What do you guys think about that? I would imagine to some degree they'd be okay with it, within reason. Maybe negotiate that a little bit. I don't think you need to go as far as cryogenically freezing your feet to the point where the bottom is basically blistered off.
I understand.
And try to play with a helmet that's been unapproved by pretty much all levels of football anywhere at a time in which the safety initiative was probably a quarter of as big and prominent as it is today. In other words, he's going the long way around to Richfield. I mean, he really didn't need to go through all of this if that's what he wanted to do. But at the same time, I can't really put anything past him anymore. It does make sense. I agree with your theory. I can see why he would want to do that. Camp is over, though. I mean, now it's like if you want to sit out preseason games, I get it. The stars are playing less and less in preseason now than before, right, and that trend will continue. To not practice at all, I think is a little bit silly. And plus, I forget if this was on Hard Knocks or I just read it somewhere. Gruden was offering to just mentally walk him through everything if he was there. He just didn't even bother to show up to that. He wasn't even at practice. So I don't know what his end game is, but it really the whole situation is just getting weirder and weirder by the day, and I'm not even sure how this ends. I really don't. I can't say that the NFL ultimately will win out because the NFL always wins in these deals. I think there's a new and determined Antonio Brown on their hands, and I'm not sure what he's going to do next.
Right. The Steelers are working to extend Joe Hayden. He's the only one on that side they're working to extend right now. When you look at the difference Joe Haden makes when he's out there, what is that difference that you see?
I think it's, and this will probably ring home pretty well for Steelers fans, but with Haden, I don't see your high-end, shutdown, you know, CB1 kind of guy. But what I do see right. is a much higher floor than what they've had in recent years. The combination of Steven Nelson this offseason, which I still think is a great signing for them, it gives them a pretty high floor secondary. They're not going to be the best in the league. These are two pretty solid players on pretty solid contracts, comparatively speaking. They're going to be asked to do perhaps a little bit more than what they've asked other corners to do in the past. And these are two guys that can live up to that. So now you have consistent veteran presence at a cornerback position. Add Mike Hilton into that as well. They have not had that for a very long time. They've traded cornerbacks in and out, whether they were rookies, first-round draft picks, undrafted free agents. They've gone through every possible way of acquiring a player you can, with the exception of the international program, to find a cornerback that can play out on the field. And all of them have let them down to some degree until really Haden got there. So you have that now. You're able to scheme up probably more. I think one of the biggest issues that they've had in what's been called too complex of a defense for a lot of the younger guys to pick up and handle in Keith Butler's time. They now have the ability to instill a more complicated defense that quarterbacks can't figure out with one quick look around the field right. and try to confuse them a little bit. That's going to lead to more turnovers. It's not just a gimme that when in doubt, you can throw it at Antoine Blake. I mean, that's not the way an offense is going to approach a game against the Steelers anymore. And obviously, that's a good thing. I think Haden's presence gives them that credibility isn't the right word, but he's a solid player. He's probably not going to be a top cornerback on a lot of teams in the league, but he's a very solid player, and he's one that they need to keep, and I can see why they want to negotiate with him.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Neil, let's get to the offensive line. Obviously, they're very, very good, and I value experience on any sports team. I think experience does mean a lot. But there also is a line where suddenly experience then leads to eventually an erosion of skill or decay. The Steelers have a veteran offensive line. How close are they to that line of effectiveness where you do have to worry as to whether they're crossing it or not?
I think that's a good question. I don't think it's going to come this year. But the way... One thing I've appreciated with the Steelers, the way that they've conducted themselves from a business perspective over the last couple of years, is they've hit very well with their offensive line contracts. I understand there a lot of people didn't like the money that they gave to Maurkice Pouncey, but there's a certain level of we're going to buy your loyalty with this. We're going to make you a top three paid center in the game, if not a top one paid center in the game. Along with that, we want you to take a leadership role, speak to the media if there's an issue that's out there, help develop younger guys that we're going to need. They want to invest in those leaders, and they're willing to pay above market a little bit to do that. I think they did that with Pouncey, and I think they're getting a pretty good deal out of it. DeCastro is a high-level, elite-level player at the guard position, one of the best of his generation. He's going to continue to get better. Ramon Foster is going to steal for them for the dollar, considering the level that he's played at for what they're paying him. And you pulled Alejandro Villanueva off the defensive line from somebody's practice squad and made him into a Pro Bowl level left tackle and then got him on a super cheap deal. So right. they've done a great job in building all of this, but now what we're seeing is the fact that they're maintaining it. They've done a great job keeping the group together, and I'll add to what you said very well, by the way, in terms of experience. It's just as much about continuity as it is experience. Keeping those guys there so they all understand how to work together, how they've done things together, and they can all have a hand in developing that other position that needs to get replaced. In this case, it's Marcus Gilbert, or kind of, from last year. You've got a battle between young guys for that starting right tackle position, and they've come up through their program seeing how these guys have conducted themselves, how they've handled business, and how they've grown. And that's why Steelers offensive linemen that are kind of plug and play right now, just because of this culture that they've built, they're so much better when they get in there. They play above and beyond where they were drafted, what we thought their abilities were, because they're playing within a group of guys that all know exactly what to do and how they need to do it. So the deterioration point is going to come eventually. I don't think it's going to look as sharp as it often does in the NFL, just because a guy like Ramon Foster, with all due respect to him, and he's a great guy, he's a great story, a great player, he doesn't at all look like an NFL offensive lineman. Let's just put it that way. He's able to get it done when he's out on the field because he's technically savvy. He's played multiple positions, and he's come up the hard way. He knows how to play the game. He knows how to play his position. And that experience is what drives him now more than his physical ability. You know, it's not that he's otherwise a dog, but he knows what he's doing.
Sure.
And he's good enough to be able to go out and get the job done.
All right, now let's get to the backup quarterback part. They've had a couple of games. Any change in your mindset as to what you're seeing as to who should be two and who should be three?
You know, it's funny. I think it's a good problem to have when you're actively debating who your third string quarterback should be.
I understand.
I think, just my opinion, between Josh Dobbs and Devlin Hodges, I think if they can trade Dobbs, then Hodges makes the team. If not, then they're going to keep Dobbs. Dobbs is basically Hodges from 3 years ago. They've already invested the time in him. They've got a draft pick in him. To suggest that Josh Dobbs, the value that he has is only going to be put where we sit right now into two preseason games, and he's capable of being beaten handily just because of eight passes between him in preseason games by an undrafted rookie free agent from FCS, I think that undermines a bit of the work that goes into playing the position and the value of a player just beyond, in a backup role, just beyond the few opportunities that he gets to go out on the field. That said, I think Hodges has looked better. I think his ceiling is a little bit higher from what I see of it right now. And it takes a lot for me to say that because I'm not the type to think the fourth quarterback can win a job just by going out there and doing well against fourth stringers. It's not that easy. He doesn't have any NFL experience at all. And they have 2 years and three training camps now with Dobbs. It's going to take a lot to upseat Dobbs. But, you know, maybe. I'm not saying it's not possible. I just know top to bottom. Mason Rudolph, I thought, has looked great. I thought he's done a great job, great improvement. He really looks comfortable with what he's doing. He's no doubt their backup quarterback. I'm convinced he's the heir apparent. We don't need to worry about Dobbs, who tore it up in preseason last year, being the backup. That's going to be Rudolph's job. If they see so fit to acquire a conditional seventh-round pick, that's probably the best of what they could get in a unique situation for somebody, for them to trade Dobbs. So with Hodges, I wouldn't be surprised if they want to keep him on the practice squad if they can get in there, which I think they probably could. It's just not something they tend to do very often. But, they're good things. I think you have to like what you've seen from Hodges. Maybe it's a little bit of a step down for Dobbs, but there are a variety of different reasons for that. I still think that for what he's doing, what he's trying to do, he's done pretty well. You and I have talked about this in this segment often over the years. Compared to where he was in college, compared to what he is now, is pretty remarkable. So I got to give him that at least. I think Dobbs is going to be there at the end, but I guess I wouldn't be surprised if they're able to drum up a very tiny market for him and he moves on.
Is there a player or two that needs to perform well on the field in a preseason game to make sure they keep their spot?
It's so hard to say that. It's you want to think that, and really, there are two different narratives that go to work. There's the football side of it. Mike Tomlin, and you hear it every time he talks after a preseason game, he's not going to reveal anything that he doesn't want to. He talks about the player effort, performance of the guys that he wants to give a little bit of praise to, and he just kind of dismisses the ones that he doesn't. Very rarely he makes a really bold statement like he did leading into their last preseason game about the tight end position, which I don't blame him for. That was a position they needed to address this offseason, and they didn't really, not in a significant way. And it's going to be a struggle for him, in my opinion, all season. And he's going to get after them, I would imagine, if they make a trade of any kind, it's going to be to acquire a tight end somewhere. But overall, I think, maybe a guy like Xavier Grimble needs to watch his back. Perhaps that though, is going to be more due to who might be available. There are always, quote-unquote surprise cuts that are out there.
Sure.
From the fan perspective, you look at things like they think that there is an equal battle between Josh Dobbs and Devlin Hodges. There probably isn't. I mean, Hodges is there to throw to other guys who probably aren't going to make the team and keep the practice going. He might do well here and there, but you got to play four quarters of a preseason game, so you need somebody to mop it up.
And he's also there to keep the pitch count down for the other quarterbacks.
Exactly. You don't want, Ben's not going to play at all, so you really need three quarterbacks to go through four quarters of four different preseason games. You need a fourth one in there. That's why he's there. But to his credit, he has looked good. But a guy like Grimble, one who's been around, one who's been there and played, He's going to have to show, in my opinion, more than what he probably has at this point if he wants to not just make the team, but if he wants to be any kind of utilized member of the team or not somebody that's going to be on the bubble from now and until the end of his career. He's got to do better than he has. I'm not sure that I've seen a lot from him that makes me excited that he'd be on the team. I think that he could make it just because they're so woefully thin at the position. But top to bottom, if there's a player out there that the Steelers could acquire in some way at the tight end position, I think they will. I think Grimble's going to be the guy out.
Always a pleasure, Neil. Appreciate it. It's a lot of fun.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us here on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We are going to be in the studio tomorrow. And then from there, we're going to go over into Lewisburg and
sit down with
everybody. Yeah. And we'll pay the usual tribute and homage to, well, the award winner.
Will you genuflect?
And what do you think my answer would be?
I wanted to hear it from you.
All right. Let's make this nice, clean, and easy. No.
No.
All right, so.
No, nada, niet, nein. How many different languages are there?
No. Hey, there is no. I mean, my goodness, no. It's
hopefully the team he calls will be better this year because he had nothing to work with last year. Nothing.
No, he did. He and the coach did a great job, and the chief came on at the end. They did a great job because, yeah. I mean, with all due respect, they didn't have a lot to work with last year.
No. And that's weird because Shikellamy, they challenged Selins Grove at least a little bit, and Selins Grove wound up going to the state championship that year, the year before. And then last year, right, just fall off, like completely fell off. So, yeah, hopefully it's better this year. A little more competitive, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully it will be. And the first game's Friday.
Yeah.
We're going to have our roundtable on Thursday with the announcers calling the games. I mean, here it is. This week is the week that everything starts. Also, in college football, it's the week that it is week zero. And week zero means two games. Down at the Citrus Bowl, Florida takes on Miami. And in Hawaii, Arizona will take on Hawaii.
Well, so there are actual college games this weekend.
Two college games this weekend and what they refer to as week zero.
Why do they do that?
Well, they do that because
because
everybody plays next week, so next week's opening weekend. And you'll have 5 days of college football. There'll be games on Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, a game, maybe one or two, but at least one game on Sunday, and there's a game Monday night.
Hmm. Yeah. It's almost like when football starts on Thursday, NFL, that is, when the NFL season starts on Thursday, and, you know, it's opening night, but it's not really opening day. Like, it's obnoxious. Like, why do they do that? I understand why they do it, but it's just obnoxious.
Yeah. Well, it's what they do. They get everybody going on college football that opening weekend, and I mean, everybody play. I don't think Miami, Florida, or Arizona, or Hawaii will play the second weekend. But everybody else will.
Well, that Miami-Florida game is going to be huge. I mean, that's got implications right off the bat.
Well, that's what they're hoping for, and that's why the Citrus Bowl wanted it. So it's going to be played in Orlando. It's not going to be played in Gainesville or in Coral Gables. Or actually, I guess they play in Miami Lakes. All right. Great to have you with us here on the show. It is opening week for high school football. It is opening week for week zero. for college football. And week zero, by the way, does explain exactly how many runs the Pirates scored last night. All right.
Yikes. Just pile on the Buccos.
I thought that was funny.
Hey, Mets and Phillies start big series tonight. So, not against each other, but major playoff implications start tonight.
Ah, very nice. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. We will be in Lewisburg tomorrow. In fact, we'll be in the studio tomorrow. Looking forward to that very much. And then off to Lewisburg, and we'll speak with our outstanding people tomorrow. It'll be a lot of fun. Now, are you going to get out there, or what are you going to do?
You know, man, I always try to make this this fall preview show, but unfortunately, due to the suit needing all of the money, I don't get paid enough to do this full time, so I have to take a full time job, and I'm always scheduled on a Wednesday. So I don't think I'm going to make it out to the party portion, but I may be here in studio to at least say hi. So
very nice.
Yes, so I will try and do that. But, yeah, I can't make the party, unfortunately. My full-time job prevents me from being there, much to my sadness. So, yes, all this talk of partying with me, it's been a ruse, I'm sad to say. Theater of the mind.
I see. All right, well, you'll be missed.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. They swing at me all the time, but they always miss.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you'll be missed, and others, you know, there'll be somebody else there that, you know, we can debate how much you'd be missed. All right, so, but that's all right. Sean will be there, Roger will be there, you know.
From what I know,
will be there. Tom will be there.
From what I know, everybody
Adam
will be
here.
There.
Yeah,
all the KX people planning. From what I hear, and the whole SBC crew will be there celebrating.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. It's a big night. Looking forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. We'll have a good time, a lot of fun. And then once the suit is done regaling the crowd with stories, I'll step in and do a preview of Penn State football about maybe 10:30, quarter of 11 tomorrow night.
You're brutal. Brutal.
What?
I have nothing. You know, you and Sean, like, you guys have known him longer. Like, I can't, you know, I don't have much on him. So I just listen to this and I'm like, oh, what do they say about me when I'm not around?
Oh, no. I mean, I say it right to his face. That's the
difference. I know.
He'll start a story. The two of us will leave the room. We'll come back. He's still telling the story. I mean, you know.
That's hilarious. I mean, he admitted to me the other day. So yesterday when we were talking, we were talking about auto racing. And first off, I didn't know what the race was in Pocono, so I was like, oh, was there a NASCAR race or something? He's like, how dare you?
I know.
And then he went on. So then he went on about this style of racing, and it was a good conversation. I had, you know, it wasn't bad. But then I was like, yeah, I have to get back to this because I was like typing up a story or something. What? And he's like, no problem. I'm sorry. I'll talk your ear off and bore you to death with this stuff. So he's not unaware. Like, that's what I'm getting. I think that's the point I'm getting at, is that he's not unaware, at least. So
when you get to a point where you feel like you're, like when you talk to somebody and you feel like you're in a recurring hostage situation, right now at that point, okay, you feel like, okay, let's try something else.
ISIS hostages have better situations? Is that what you're saying to me?
Well, no. I think they what they've done is they've recorded some of his stories.
And the
CIA has used them in interrogations. I've had enough.
Waterboarding didn't do it, but this did.
I've had enough.
Yikes. Oh, man.
All the rocket launchers are over there.
Oh, the brutality of it all.
All right. So the Phillies play the Red Sox tonight.
Oh, man. What happened to the Red Sox?
What happened? Quite simply, the pitching is just not good. Last year, they were able to mask some of their problems in the postseason. And I thought Alex Cora handled it right. Where all five starters were used at one point or another in bullpen roles. David Price came out of the bullpen against Houston. I think he also did against Los Angeles. Chris Sale, of course, came out of the bullpen against the Yankees, and he came out of the bullpen and he closed the clinching game in Los Angeles.
Right.
Remember, he struck out the last three.
Yep.
Rick Porcello was used against the Yankees in Houston in middle relief. Nathan Eovaldi and Eduardo Rodriguez, all five starters were used at one point or another to pitch in the postseason out of the bullpen. This year, you know, once you get back to the regular season, you then have to use your starters as starters and your bullpen as a bullpen. Well, the starters haven't been very good. I think the starters ERA for the Red Sox is 5.04. I'm sorry, you can't win that way. And the bullpen has not performed well. You can't just win on offense. You just can't.
And their offense is sickeningly good. Like, it's really something special. Right. I feel like every week for the past, like, several weeks, they've had the player of the week, and it doesn't matter.
I mean, you know, let's face it. Betts and Benintendi and Martinez and Devers and Bogarts, Vasquez, you know, Brock Holt. I mean, they've got a darn good offense.
I mean, Devers has over 100 RBIs already.
But you can't go into every game where the idea is, quote, we need to outscore them because we can't hold them down. Now, it's very hard for the Red Sox to win a 2-1, 3-2, 4-3 game. They need to win games 8-5. They need to win games 9-6.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
And that, you know, and you're not going to win games doing it that way unless you're playing the Orioles. Do you realize that the Orioles beat the Yankees, I think, the first two times they played this
year?
Two
out of the first three.
Right.
And then they've lost 17 straight.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, it's historically bad. It's historically bad. And here's the kicker here. So Gleyber Torres, I believe, has something like 25 home runs this year or something like that.
It's 13 are against the Orioles.
He's got 13 of them against the Orioles.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Like, that's completely odd. It's one of the weirdest stats you're ever going to see in any given year. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Now, see, this is where I look at the Phillies. I look at the Phillies. I think they're also in a spot where they need to outscore people. Because I don't think the Phillies' pitching is very good.
They only have one good pitcher right now, and that's Nola.
Nola is terrific.
Yes, he's fantastic. He's going tonight, by the way. So,
But they need to win games 7-5, 6-4. You know, they don't get many of those. Hey, they lost two. They won 2-1. They won 3-2.
But Nola's not having that great a season as compared to last year. He's still at like a 3.5 ERA considering. So,
well, compared to the rest of the staff, he's darn good.
Well, yeah.
And Rhys Hoskins has been in a slump.
He's the coldest I've ever seen right now.
You know what? But you think about it, a year ago at this time, Rhys Hoskins got into a slump.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they all do it. You know, they all...
Sometimes guys get tired.
Streaky hitters, man. Some of them are just streaky hitters, too. It's just what it is.
And the point I made about Harper is simple. I can't believe the kind of season he's having. He's actually having the season he always has.
Yeah. He is who he is.
I mean, that's who he is. There's and just because the Phillies paid $330 million over 13 years doesn't take away, it is not the $330 million over 13 years does not make him a Triple Crown winner.
No. No, it doesn't.
You are who you are. I mean, if you're going to sit there and you're going to say to me, who's a better hitter? Let's just take the two teams playing tonight. Bryce Harper or J.D. Martinez? Well, J.D. Martinez is a better hitter.
Yeah, I would take Martinez, I think.
He hits for a higher average, hits more home runs. He's a better hitter. Mookie Betts is a better hitter. But I'll say this about Harper. Harper plays hard all the time.
He certainly tries. He's not a $300 million. I mean, him and Manny Machado, they might have been the most overhyped free agents of all time. Both of them.
Look, on a relative scale, none of these guys are worth the money they're getting on a relative scale.
Trout's the only one.
But even Trout, you're talking like $400 million? I mean, come on.
Well, relative meaning to like life, like in the world, or do you mean in baseball? Like in terms of baseball in the world, world that they live in, Trout is more than worth what he's getting.
Trout is a great player. Okay,
he's the best player, like hands down. I don't even think there's an argument.
Who, by the way, has made it to one playoff?
That's not his fault, though. You can't blame him for that.
We
just got done talking about how the Red Sox fell off because of their pitching.
Right, but that my point is, you're paying all this money to a player. Would you be better off taking all of that money and now having eight very good players?
It depends. It really depends who you are. Like, the Yankees could have paid Mike Trout this, and it wouldn't have made a difference. Like, because they're doing it right now. They're paying Stanton $30 million to sit on the bench.
The Yankees already have good players.
Right, but the point
that the Angels don't. So the point is, and I'll go back to the Albert Pujols signing by the Angels.
Sure.
Originally, the St. Louis Cardinals, they talked about the, quote, hometown discount. 10 years, $225 million. And then the Angels came up with 10 years, $240. So the Cardinals looked around and they said, I think we might be better off taking the $24 million a year and spreading it among three or four other players.
Sure.
All right. That's my point about Trout. Would the Angels as an organization be better taking that X amount per year they're paying him and spread it out among three to five other really good players instead of having all of their lot cast with one guy?
Would the Angels be? Probably. Would the Yankees or any other high-paying team like the Red Sox or like the Cubs or someone with a large, large budget or the Dodgers?
But they don't need him.
Right. I know they don't need him.
All right. They don't need him, so they don't need to pay him. The Angels do need him, especially in the market they're in, because they are completely dwarfed by the Dodgers.
Right.
In publicity. So, yes, they do need Trout, but it is a legitimate question to ask as to, do we pay, what's Trout getting? $35, $40 million a year?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, let's say
I think it's
38 million
and change or something like that when it all said and done.
Are we better off than getting $5, $8 million players that are really good as opposed to the eggs in one basket for one awesome player? And that, to me, is a big debate. And now here's the next part. 33 is the number that you don't want to see if you are running a front office in baseball. There is a major trend now that if you were 33 or older, they don't want you on the roster. They want to put the money into younger players. And not only are you putting the money into younger players, guess what? Younger players are also inexpensive players.
Right. So, but I think the discussion that we're having are two different discussions. It's a circumstantial thing. Like you said, relatively, none of these players are worth X amount of dollars. And I get what you're saying, but relative to the league that we're playing in, can we agree that Mike Trout deserves the most money? That I think that's what I'm getting at. Like, do they should they have overpaid and paid $400 million or $38 million a year? Probably not. Probably not the best move. However, compared to all the players in baseball, Mike Trout should make the most. You know, there's very few Tom Brady's out there that are going to take less money to win championships. That's just not a
but
thing
Tom,
that happens.
But see, and the, but the difference is Tom Brady can.
Right, because he doesn't have to. Right, he doesn't need to make
right,
the money.
He doesn't need to make the money because in his household there's already a lot of money that's being made.
Right, of course. So, but that's what I'm saying. You said relative to, and that's and that was my point. My point is that there is no player in baseball that deserves to make more than Mike Trout does right now. Like, there's none. In my and that's my opinion, and my the numbers would back it up. And in comparison to Pujols, you're right. 33 is a number they don't want to see. Trout's 27. Pujols was 32 when he signed that big contract.
Right, exactly. And I believe that Robinson Cano was 31 when he signed his contract.
Right, which was a bad one.
Yeah, but they all are. They all are bad contracts.
Well, I don't think Mike Trout is, because I think Trout will actually drive money to the Angels when it's all said and done. He's going to be a staple for their franchise. They're not going to win.
I would never give, idealistically, and I know I could not hold to this because my management probably would not make me hold to this, I would never give a player in baseball more than 5 years. I would never give a pitcher more than 3 years.
I agree. I mean, I tend to agree with you on that front. If we're talking about, like, should these players get paid this much? No. That I completely agree with. I'm not in a disagreement with that. I just wanted to make it clear. My point was Mike Trout is the best player in baseball and deserves relatively the most money as compared to Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, or anybody else. That was my point.
Yet, I hear over and over again, he wins the war number all the time. And, of course, I think that stuff is just hogwash. The war number? Okay, I got it. If I replace Mike Trout with somebody else, we're not going to win as much. Okay. We're already finishing under 500 with Mike Trout.
Right.
Okay, so what does it matter? It's totally... I remember the year that they had this big debate between Melky Cabrera of the Tigers. Miguel Cabrera of the Tigers and Mike Trout as to who should be the MVP. And Cabrera won the Triple Crown, the first one since Carl Yastrzemski.
Right.
And I said, it's obvious it is Melky Cabrera. I'm sorry, I keep saying Melky.
Miguel.
Because of the Pirates, I think.
Yep.
Miguel Cabrera. They said, well, why is it obvious? The war number, all the war, all the Saban patricians. I looked, I said, excuse me, he won the Triple Crown. They made the playoffs. He doesn't win the Triple Crown. They don't make the playoffs.
Well, I agree, and that's why Mike Trout doesn't win the award every year.
Not done yet. Okay, Mike Trout had an awesome season, didn't finish above 500. I could put somebody else out there and not finish above 500.
Right. This was the same argument. Okay.
It wasn't even a debate. It was an E. I mean, if I'm sitting there like, are you people nuts?
It depends.
Triple Crown made playoffs. Sorry, Triple Crown made playoffs. Awesome season, finished under 500.
Right.
I'm going to go with the guy. If he's not on that team and he doesn't win the Triple Crown, they don't make the playoffs.
Probably not. You're probably right.
Right.
Now
you can start debating as to, okay, which one do I vote for? But when one guy becomes the difference between a team making it and not making it versus a team that's way back in the pack, hey, I'm sorry, but you know, your numbers in the end meant a lot to your personal life and your whole deal, maybe to your fans, but it meant nothing to the race.
Right, and I agree with you there. That's why I almost think there should be a second award. There should be, like, the greatest player and the MVP. Like, because there's only been one year that a team that didn't make the playoffs, where that year that A-Rod hit 56 home runs and the Rangers were dead last.
But have you noticed I never announce who the MVP is in the show?
I have never noticed that, no.
I never know. I never have. You want to know why?
Because
I think that because it's all become irrelevant.
Well, it's not about the most valuable player, and I get that. I completely agree with you there. I agree with you that a team should have to make the playoffs or should at least be in the race.
No. I mean, Andre Dawson won it 1 year when they finished last with the Cubs.
Right.
Because he had a statistically an awesome year.
Right.
I understand it. But I don't announce the MVP because I just think it's just whatever.
Well, it's a personal
award. It's like who wins the championship.
I mean, the same argument happened last year when Jacob deGrom won the Cy Young with a losing record. You know, he was 8-9, but he had like a sub-1 ERA, historically low ERA, And there was an I remember having this discussion with a friend of mine, and he's like, the Mets could lose, they could have the same record without him. Like, they could have the same record without him.
Right.
Why should he be the best pitcher in baseball? And I said, because he's the best pitcher in baseball. Now, the difference between a Cy Young and an MVP is that it's not the most valuable pitcher, it's the best pitcher. So I think he deserved to win that. But when we're talking about the MVP, most valuable player, I agree with you. Cabrera should have won over Trout. Trout's always the most outstanding player, but Cabrera deserved to win.
I don't take part in that stuff. I don't care who the MVP is. Do not care.
Who's the World Series MVP? That's what you care about.
Nope, don't care who wins the World Series MVP. Oh. I care who wins the World Series.
Right, of course. But usually the World Series MVP is the winner.
It is a team sport. So I care which team wins. Right. I don't care who wins the individual award. It's a nice honor. It brings with it a bonus, a truck, a car, something. That's really nice. I'm happy for them. But to me, it's irrelevant. The bottom line is, do you get hardware? Do you get a ring? It's a team sport.
Absolutely.
It is not like winning Wimbledon where, it is an awesome individual accomplishment. Winning the Masters is an awesome individual accomplishment. Winning the NBA championship is done by everybody. You can't do it without, one guy carried us. Well, no, we ended up scoring 112 points. He had 30. That means, to be honest with you, 82 other points were scored by other people.
Right.
Okay. Right. That's how I look at team sports. And yes, I am also part of the group that does vote for all Big Ten. I have to vote for the player of the year, the lineman of the year, the coach. I do have to vote for all that stuff, and I do put a lot of care into it to make sure that people that deserve recognition at their respective positions get the proper recognition. I don't just sit there and go, okay, I need 12 linemen. Who do I got here? I've looked at tape. I've looked at games, things like that. So I try because I know it means something to the young people to be honored. And obviously the people win these honors. But to me, the glory of the MVP votes and Cy Young votes, I lost that stuff 25 years ago. I'm like, who cares? who won the title?
Right, right.
It's a team sport. Who won? Hey, I know we have to wrap it up.
Just go to the end.
Yeah.
At this point.
We've got tomorrow we'll be in studio. And then we'll all go over to Lewisburg tomorrow. We'll have a great time. Suit has some great stories from the Jersey Shore game he did last year. And then we'll get into what we have coming up for Penn State football. And, of course, WKOK will be carrying the games once again.
Excellent.
And the opener is next week with a 2 o'clock airtime, 3:30 the kickoff with Idaho. Then it's 7:30 with a 6 o'clock airtime for Buffalo. And then it's Pitt at noon with a 10:30 kickoff. And then it's that Friday night game at Maryland. And that's how September goes.
Sounds busy.
Oh, it's busy. But it's fun. But it's fun busy.
Of course, it's fun. It's sports.
It's fun busy.
If it's not fun, why do it?
Well, that's what sports is supposed to be. It's supposed to be fun. It's not about arriving in hot air balloons and I've got a helmet problem.
Unless you're a Mets fan, then it's not fun.
I thought you guys were winning.
We are right now, but just give it time. We have a tough nine-game stretch that starts tonight. We'll see what happens.
Listen to you. You didn't even play.
I sure do. I'm in the bullpen. You didn't know.
Well, that explains May. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.